And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Friday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week we bring in our good friend Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter and host of Talking with TD. Teron, what's going on, my man?
Hey, good morning, fellas. How's it going?
Not bad. How's the social distancing going? How's the quarantine going for you?
Yeah, it's going well. You know, occasional walks. That's pretty much what my entertainment has boiled down to. But it's all good.
So, Teron, obviously the NFL comes out yesterday. Roger Goodell announcing that the draft will take place on April 23rd through the 25th, as originally scheduled, advising NFL teams to get ready to make preparations to do it offsite and to kind of do it remotely. Were you surprised that the NFL didn't decide to change the date of the NFL draft? What was your reaction when Roger Goodell came out with that news yesterday?
I thought that's what they were going to do. I mean, once they had said that it was going to go to an event that didn't have people there, I said, yeah, they're going to go ahead and go business as usual as far as the date's concerned. And I think it's a good thing. I think the league understands its level of entertainment for everyone, and it is what it is, man, and it's one of those the show must go on mindsets, and that's what they're taking.
So Teron, yeah, to me it's like, as long as the playing field is level, I mean, I understand probably every GM in the league right now is like, is not feeling as prepared as they do every other year, and is feeling like, you know, there's some more opportunity, I guess, to have some misses here. But as far as I can tell, you know, it is going to be a level playing field. I mean, do you have any concerns from that perspective?
I mean, I think it's going to be a level playing field, and that everyone is having that short period of time to, or shorter period of time to do their evaluation, are their complete ones. But I do think this is going to make the better scouting and personnel departments rise to the top. And the other thing that is really interesting in this is all the guys who are that borderline undrafted free agent to sixth or seventh round pick. I think not being able to get in front of the personnel people and show them, you know, something to inspire them to draft them. Yeah, I think that definitely hurts those guys, you know. And then even after that, the undrafted free agent market, I think, is going to be really, really loaded. And I just want to see how that frenzy happens too, you know, because, you know, as soon as Mr. Irrelevant is picked, next thing you know, you're hearing so-and-so signed here, so-and-so signed there. And it's just a whirlwind. So it's going to be interesting, but I don't really have concerns. I'm curious to see how this works and how it's going to showcase the teams that do it a little bit better than others.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, on the line with us. And Teron, obviously this week the Titans have lost Tajay Sharpe, LaShawn Sims, and Austin Johnson. Of those three, which one do you think will be the biggest loss for the Titans, and how do you go about replacing those three guys as a whole?
Good question. I would probably say, wow. Normally I would say Tajay Sharpe. I really do think that he'll probably be the biggest loss, because he's one of those guys that gives them a player that could line up on the inside and the outside. And he's a pretty sure route runner. You could get the replacement in the draft, but I think Austin Johnson deserves some consideration too, just simply because what do they have at D tackle right now? You know, interior guys, you know, or even that whole defensive line, that's an area where they need to make some improvements, and not even improvements, to get some depth. So we'll see how that works, but I would say those two guys, and end of the day, I lean towards Sharpe.
Yeah, I mean, with Austin Johnson moving on, I will tell you, Teron, one of the first things I thought was, I feel a little bit more like a real push for Jadeveon Clowney is happening. Because, I mean, you've got to – obviously, I know you like Marlon Davidson a lot and have talked about him as a guy in the draft that could be certainly be a possibility here. And there are other smaller moves you could make, but does it feel to you like that's just the other shoe that might be dropping here at some point?
I really thought that. I think as we continue to distance ourselves from the start of free agency, it's almost like Clowney to the Titans doesn't seem like it's going to happen. But even if he does go there, he's going to be an outside linebacker. They're not going to use him as a 5-tech, you know, in that scheme. Man, they won't use him much as a 5-tech in that scheme. I'll say it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it just seems like something has to happen, because it's just like they cannot just walk into the draft with this much of a need for multiple positions. So really just waiting to see what happens. And I think Marcus Golden should still be in the mix, and he's not a bad fallback option after Clowney.
Teron, there was a report that came out by Ian Rapoport once Tajae Sharpe signed with the Vikings, saying that he is expected to be their number two behind Adam Thielen, replacing Stephon Diggs. Like, do you think Tajae Sharpe could be a number two wide receiver in this league? Like, what do you think his ceiling is?
Yeah, I think he will be a number two, and it just really depends on what you have at your number, your lead receiver, what you are looking for, to like how you want to complement him. I think, you know, when you look at Thielen and what he does, I think Tajae Sharpe is a lot different, but he complements him well, you know, as far as another possession guy, another guy for Kirk Cousins to throw to on third downs. I think it's a good situation for them, but I really think they're going to draft a receiver as well. I'm almost positive of that. They'll come out of this deep, loaded class with more help. So, yeah, I mean, he'll be a number two, but I think it's going to be kind of like a 2A, 2B situation with whoever they draft.
Yeah, obviously great receiver draft. And speaking of that with the Titans, so like you said, Tajae Sharpe, reliable guy, ran good routes, caught the ball. You could move him around. So you're getting Cam Batson healthy. Obviously, Khalil Freeman had a nice year, and we know who the top three are for this team. But if the Titans do go into the draft looking at a receiver, do you think it is more along the lines of a speed guy? I mean, you and I have talked about KJ Hamler and, you know, the possible interest there, or more like a guy in the mold of a Tajae Sharpe, a possession guy?
I think it's going to be, ideally for them, it'll be a guy that has both of those talents and also can return. That's asking a lot from a rookie,
yeah.
But yeah, I think Jalen Reagor should be in play. I think someone like a Devin Duvernay should be in play. If you want a guy that could give you help in the return game, but they could also, you know, look to draft a corner that also does that. So you don't have to have return, but there's plenty of guys. I mean, Courtney Davis is a very good route runner out of A&M, and he's someone I could see them going for. Van Jefferson as well. So even Kalijah Lipscomb. So that's the good thing about all of this. There are plenty of options, and you're going all the way down to the seventh round where you could get a guy that could come in and play for you.
Teron, last thing for you here. You know, obviously with the coronavirus situation going on and pretty much shutting down the world of sports, we've been kind of taking looks back in terms of the most fun team we've ever covered, the most fun game we've ever covered in our careers. What's the most fun game that you've ever had covering a sport, whether it's football or something else?
Yeah, for me, it's actually a recent memory, and that's in 17. That NFC championship game was so much fun, man. Just the build up to it. I'm talking about the Eagles against the Vikings, and just the build up to it, all the trash that was being talked, you know, and watching that. And then when Patrick Robinson, Chris Long, you know, he pressured the quarterback, Case Keenum, and Keenum threw a bad pass to Patrick Robinson, picked it off and ran it to the end zone for a pick six. And this was after that long pass, and it was like a 42-yarder to Kyle Rudolph for the opening touchdown. When that Patrick Robinson pick six happened, I remember filling the press box at Lincoln Financial Field. Like, that press box was rocking, literally. And it just the goosebumps, you know, it was an awesome feeling, man. It definitely, so that for me would be the top experience that I've covered.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter and host of Talking with TD, has been our guest. Teron, thanks so much as always, my man, for joining us. We appreciate it.
No problem. You guys take it easy.
Absolutely. Yeah. You too, my man. Joe, when we come back, I want to get into the Derrick Henry discussion a little bit. After having the franchise tag placed on him, how realistic do we think a holdout is until he receives a long-term deal? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic, taking you through this Friday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, we've talked a lot about Derrick Henry and the Titans' decision to place the franchise tag on him, have until July 15th to work out a longer-term deal with Derrick Henry. At what point, if you're a Titans fan or if you're a member of the front office, do you start to get really nervous that Derrick Henry may entertain the idea of holding out until he receives a long-term deal? And the second question I'll ask you to that, do you think Derrick Henry should hold out until he receives a longer-term deal?
Well, I think if the Titans are not going to try to make a deal happen and just basically like put the tag on, then I think he should hold out. You know, I mean, I think some of this has to do with behind the scenes, the conversation and the seriousness of actually trying to figure out a long-term deal. You know, I mean, I think if that's happening in good faith, then I'd be surprised if he did, and I don't think he should. If he's feeling like it's just the tag and that's that, you know, again, said it before, I'll say it a million times. It's not just being tagged and the long term, the lack of you know, long term security that comes with that. It's also that the specific salary with the tag is significantly underpaying Derrick Henry for what he is right at this moment. So that's the difference to me is just what is happening behind the scenes. Are there real efforts to make it happen?
Yeah, I think so too. And look, Derrick Henry, I mean, he just kind of seems like the guy to me that just wants to play football, wants to get out there and play as much as he can. And I think a lot of people in the NFL, and especially even running backs, when they're in a situation like this, they all kind of they have that aspect to them, that mentality to them. But at the end of the day, like, it's also like maximizing your value and getting as much as you can while you can. And we've talked at length about, you know, the running back position as a whole, the kind of how it's valued right now in the NFL. We even had, you know, David Newton on, who covers the Panthers, and they were talking about, you know, Christian McCaffrey and his new deal that's going to come up at some point. Like, he fully expects the Panthers to get that deal done, but also realizes there's going to come a point and a number that the Panthers are willing to go to, and they're not going to go much higher than that because they know at the end of the day, regardless of how good Christian McCaffrey is and how well he's played and how many different things he does for the Panthers, he's had a lot of wear and tear on his body. He's had a lot of hits he's taken over the last couple of years, and it is the running back position. I think you and I are pretty comfortable with the wear and tear part of it for Derrick Henry, especially considering the first couple years of his NFL career. You know, he was essentially a backup to DeMarco Murray and really didn't get rolling until late at the end of the season 2 seasons ago, where he really became the every down full-time guy. But I just kind of look at this situation. If you're the Titans, I still think the longer this goes on and the longer that you don't come to a longer-term agreement with Derrick Henry, the more of a dangerous game you're playing, just specifically with the identity this team has built up over the course of the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, you know, I talked to Floyd Reese yesterday because I'm writing something about the basically the idea of just, you know, it's almost like just take the tag running back away and call him something else, because it's like it's like an insult now to call someone a running back in this league. You know,
yeah.
You think about, you know, if Derrick Henry makes $10 million this year, how many other guys in this team will make more and go look at like the top guys at other positions. You know, I mean, Amari Cooper just signed for $20 million a year at receiver. You know, offensive tackles make a whole bunch more than running backs, and let alone we're talking about Tannehill making, you know, three times as much as Derrick Henry. And I understand quarterback versus running back, but man, three times as much. That's to me, that's just wild. So, but Floyd had an interesting, and he was talking on the on Jared and the GM yesterday. You know, his sort of vision for a long term deal would be very, you know, very front loaded, and of course that's the case. I mean, that would have to be the case. And then, you know, way, you know, I think he had like his fourth year would be like $7 million a year, you know, but coming in at a more, you know, higher than that into the teens, I think in his first year, you know, first 2 years, more in that range where he should be. I mean, he should be right there with the top guys. You know, Zeke just signed for $15 million a year. And I think that's the thing. I mean, I think if you're making a long-term deal with Derrick Henry, for one thing, if you're on the Titan side of the table, you will make a point of the two down back versus a guy like McCaffrey or an Alvin Kamara, guys who are very, very good at running routes and catching passes. It's never going to be Derrick Henry. He's terrific. Getting, you know, get him the ball on a screen, and he can obviously go the distance. But as a route running back out of the backfield, you know, it's not going to be him. So you're going to have to bring in a backup. So that's one thing that you can – that's the case you can make for the Titans on that side. But also, I don't know that there's another back who's more central to a team's attack than Henry is to the Titans right now. And that's what you use on his side of it. And so if you make a deal, you know, I mean, the Tannehill deal, you can get out after 2 years basically, and you're going to pay about $62 million, I think, in guaranteed money, and you can just get out of it. And I think that's the same idea that you'd want with a Derrick Henry. I mean, you could look at the Tannehill deal like a double tag, and I think a double tag with Henry with a lot more guaranteed money and some security, I know he'd be a lot happier with that.
Joe, it's interesting because you look at, you know, players around the league now, and you're talking about MVP awards. I mean, it's pretty much just quarterback-driven at this point. But I look at Derrick Henry, and you had an interesting phrase there that I agree with. I'm not sure there's a running back in the league, maybe with the possible exception of Christian McCaffrey, that's more central to his team's success than Derrick Henry is. So when you look at the way Derrick Henry plays, he's not going to catch a ton of balls out of the backfield. He's not going to be a huge threat receiving. Do you think with the way that he plays the game and the style the Titans play, could Derrick Henry be a legitimate MVP candidate in the AFC?
That is a good question. You know, I think it's very hard to unseat the quarterbacks, obviously. I mean, I'm trying to think of the last time. So you're going back to 2012, Adrian Peterson with the Vikings. You know, it's got to be that kind of season.
Did Gurley win MVP with the Rams? I can't remember.
He did not. Tom Brady won it in 17. So, but that he would have certainly. I mean, I think you could make a good case for him that year. So everybody since Adrian Peterson in 2012 has been, and this is the AP NFL Most Valuable Player Award winners. Everybody since Adrian Peterson has been quarterbacks, including Peyton Manning, by the way, in 13 with the Broncos. And then for years before that, you're going back another several years to LaDainian Tomlinson in 06 with the Chargers, to Sean Alexander in 05 with the Seahawks. So, I mean, you know, you go back even like 15 years, and it was a lot more likely that you would see, you know, a running back. Before that, you had a Marshall Faulk, you had a Terrell Davis, you had a Barry Sanders. Now you're getting into, you know, Barry Sanders is 1997. We're going into Peyton Manning senior year that we were just talking about. You're going 20 plus years from now. It's still even, you know, even back then when the running back was a lot more, you know, respected, frankly, in the league, it's still mostly quarterbacks who win MVP year after year, but you sprinkle in an Emmitt Smith and a Thurman Thomas. I think Derrick Henry, if the Titans were like a 12-4, 13-3 kind of team, and he has like a 1,700-yard kind of season, then I think he'd be right there. But what kind of numbers is Patrick Mahomes going to put up in Kansas City, and what kind of numbers are they going to put up on the win column? And then Lamar Jackson just won it, by the way. And, you know, we all saw what the Titans did in the playoffs to the Ravens and in slowing him down for enough of the game to take a big lead. But Lamar Jackson is a candidate again in 2020 to win the MVP.
Joe, I look at the Titans at the running back position outside of Derrick Henry. They're obviously going to have to address that probably in the draft at some point. And I evaluate, like, what are we looking for in terms of the backup running back with the Titans and what they should be able to do? Because, to be honest with you, and this is just the way I approach it, I'm less concerned about how well they run the ball, and I'm more concerned of how versatile they are. Like, I think you need to have a running back that can get out of the backfield, can catch the ball, can be a receiving threat. Because, I mean, let's be honest, on running downs, Derrick Henry is going to be in there almost every time just with the way that he plays. I think if you're the Titans and you're looking for that complementary piece, you want somebody out of the backfield that could be really dynamic in terms of the passing game, want him to be a good pass blocker as well. Basically, you want him to be what you thought Deion Lewis was and ultimately never really gave you here in Nashville.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, you know, Deion Lewis was very good the first half of his first year. You know, he had some big games. He had a great game at Dallas. You know, I mean, he had some moments, but as soon as Derrick Henry really took control, it's weird. I mean, it was honestly almost like Deion Lewis got way less effective too. And maybe some of that is, a lot of running backs will tell you, like, you know, if you don't get that many opportunities, you know, that hurts you. It hurts your performance. But, you know, a guy who, you know, we're doing a lot of drafts at The Athletic. John Glennon did a mock draft, and he had Keyshawn Vaughn as a fifth-round pick for the Titans. Now, is Keyshawn Vaughn a classic, like a guy you're talking about who's, you know, like a McCaffrey Kamara kind of pass catcher out of the backfield? I don't know about that. I thought when they threw to him, I mean, he had 29 catches for 286 and a touchdown. I thought he looked good catching the ball. I don't know that he's exactly in that mold. I still think also, though, if you have a guy like that, you're thinking about pass blocking, you're thinking about third down work. But still, if you can have a guy like that to get a series here and there, and even just have the threat of, you know, the draw play on third and six or whatever, you know, that's not bad to have too. And also just have a guy who, if Henry does get hurt, does have to miss a week or two, and now you can say, okay, this guy can carry it 20 times in a game, and we have a chance with him. I mean, it is a pretty important position for the Titans to stock this offseason.
When we come back, the legendary Terry Criss, multiple-time Stanley Cup winner and Preds TV analyst, will join us. We'll find out what Crispy's been up to. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic, and it's that time of the week we bring in our good friend Terry Criss, the legendary Preds TV analyst and multiple-time Stanley Cup champion, brought to you by Highland Group. Crispy, what's going on, brother? I feel like I haven't seen you in forever.
I know, guys. Believe me, we're feeling the same as everybody else. We're sort of hunkered down in here, just hoping to ride this out like everybody's going to. And I was just talking with Sheila this morning. We're sitting up with our coffee and whatnot. And I said, you know, periodically you got to get out. You got to go to the grocery stores, et cetera, and pick up the necessities. And I said, the weird thing is when you go to the grocery store, the people are friendlier than they ever been. And I guess I said to Sheila, you know why they're the same as us? They're so housebound and so tired of being quarantined by just the two of you that you're going to talk to anybody now. But mind you, from 6 feet away. But you're all friendly, saying, just to hear a different voice for a change.
No question about it. I've kind of found myself in that mold as well. Crispy, we've been talking this week. The Athletic came out with a poll that had Roman Josi winning the Norris Trophy and had him winning it by a pretty wide margin. When you look at the year that Josi has had so far, do you think he should be the Norris Trophy winner if the season were to end and not come back from a regular season point of view?
You know what? Yeah, that's a given for me, simply because, let's be honest, I've seen Josi all these years. He's our captain. I've been around him as a young man on and off the ice, and I automatically. But then again, I'd imagine if you just were talking to somebody, I'm talking about Carlson, the one who's leading the league right now as a defenseman and whatnot, they'd say there's no race in this. Carlson should win it hands down. But I think when you look at what it means to the team, Josi is our team. I mean, all year long, he's been the best for us. He's led us in points. He's led us in big games. He's led talking in the dressing room. And I look at the points are great, yeah, and they play a part in it. But to me, when you're voting these awards and these things throughout the season, I think look as to what the guy has meant to his team. And right now, Josi, to me, is a consummate team man that we've got.
Yeah, what is it about Josi this year, Crispy, that has helped him take it up a notch? Not that it's up a lot. He's been a great player for several years now. But if you're analyzing his game, what has gotten better?
Probably confidence. I mean, when you watch a player, and I used to watch, excuse me for saying this one, but Bobby Orr. And when Bobby Orr took the puck behind his net, our whole bench just held their breath. The guys on the ice were just hoping they could get between him and the net in time to slow him down or whatever. He could make it happen. You knew something was going to happen. Or a pot band when he would pick that puck up and come down the ice and do it. Or a few other of the defensemen back in that era. Josi is that type of player. And I guarantee you, you watch the other team's bench. When Josi starts to move down ice and they know he's going coast to coast, half their bench will stand up and see where he's going, what he's doing, yelling at the other players where he is. And I think that's all confidence that you can do it. And I think Josi realizes now that with the situation this team is in, and we don't have a lot of guys out of the back end anymore that can do that, it falls on him. And he takes a lot of pride in it. So I think, I guess the word we're looking for, he's playing with confidence. And well, he should.
Terry Criss, Preds TV analyst, on the line with us. And Crispy, you've won multiple Stanley Cups. You've won a couple as a player, won one as a coach. I'm sure that they're different experiences, but what's of those has been more satisfying to you, do you think? Winning cups as a player or as a coach?
Well, I got to tell you, real quickly, the satisfaction was when you were a coach, because when the final buzzer goes and you won the cup as a coach, you get that sense of relief in you. And what went through my mind in Montreal that night was the fact that, wow, I saved my job for another year. I'm going to have a job for another year. But being honest with you, as a player, there's nothing like it. I mean, your first ever championship, you start out as a six-year-old kid in Canada, U.S., or Russia, wherever you are, dreaming of winning the Stanley Cup one day, hoping it's all. And then suddenly when that day arrives, as a player, you can't go back over. You can't match it again. It's a once-in-a-lifetime, first time ever. So it's whatever you can go through life, when you do it for the first time, it can't be duplicated as a first time. You can do it again, but there's no feeling. But as a coach, you're worried about 23 guys. As a player, when I played and was going to the rink for the cup, you only worry about yourself. What do I have to do tonight? What do I have to bring tonight to this game to make our team win? What is my responsibilities tonight? As a coach, your biggest thing is, did I put the right lineup out there? Have I got the right players in there? Am I putting them out at the right time? Am I shortening my bench at the right time? And you're worried about a lot of personalities at the same time. So, yeah, as a coach, satisfaction. As a player, euphoria.
So as a coach, Crispy, were you, like I think a lot of coaches are, where the losses are worse than the wins are good?
Yeah, you know what? The losses are just... I always had a rule, too, that and I think Coach Lavin, that was the same way. You don't talk to your players after the game, win or lose, but especially after you've lost a tough one, you've had some rough ones, and you're going through them. As a coach, you learn that you're going to say some things, you might want to say some things that you regret in the morning. So I guess the biggest thing you learn is take the wins, go in the dressing room and tell the guys played a good game, we'll take the 2 points, get ready. But the loss, you take a whole night and morning to dissect it before you go back into it. So the difference is, accept the wins and the points, but the losses, take some time to breathe, and the next day discuss it with your team.
Crispy, there's been a lot of fun players to watch, elite dynamic players to watch over the years in the NHL, from Gordie Howe to Bobby Orr, Gretzky, Lemieux, all these different guys. Which player in today's game do you have the most fun watching in the NHL, in your opinion, and why?
Okay, that's a good one because we've got so many out there now that can fly. McDavid jumps to my mind. I love to watch this young man play. McKinnon, he's almost the same as McDavid. These youngsters are big, they're fast, they're dynamic. The old-time warrior, who I always wait for him to break open a game, Ovechkin, when he's out there and he's dressed and playing, they get a chance to watch him play. Our league is blessed now with so many young, talented players. Each team usually has one of those. And I think in our sport, the youngsters like McDavid and McKinnon in that era all coming through now are the ones that make a game exciting. And in our game, like, I love watching, let's be honest, Grimaldi on our team. When that little guy comes out there in Arby, I love because they're gutsy. They're just war horses out there, those two little guys, and they come at you. We mentioned Josi because, like I said, in my mind, he should win the Norris. He should be the one to have it. So, yeah, and in the league this year, we're blessed with a lot of young players and exciting players.
Well, Robbie mentioned the poll we had over the Athletic, you know, with Josi clearly ahead right now for the Norris. And Leon Draisaitl right now is the leader for the Hart. Robbie said he likes McKinnon. Who would you vote for right now for the Hart Trophy?
I forgot about Draisaitl too. I should have put him in there because he killed us the last game. I mean, he just personifies what I was just talking about. Out of all those right now, I would have to take Draisaitl. Mm-hmm. He's doing it all. He's got the whole package. He's tough. He's strong. He scores. He back checks. He does it all for his hockey club. And like I said, they were a team that weren't. They were building and building, and now they've got him. So I'm thinking in my mind right now, Draisaitl probably.
Crispy, last thing here for you before we let you go. Obviously, you've won championships. We've talked about that. But if you had to pick one moment in your hockey career that was your favorite moment, what would it be?
You know what? I think going back to my thing was when I played my first NHL game in the Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto. And I made the team, made the cut, stayed there. We were going into Toronto Maple Leafs for our first game, my first game ever, and I just grew up about 3 hours north of Toronto. And I brought my mom and dad down from the north for that game in Toronto. And when I hit the ice for the warm-ups, to go around in warm-ups, it dawned on me, like I had chills, and I said, you know what? I've been waiting to get on this ice my whole life. Maple Leaf Gardens, Toronto Maple Leafs. And look up in the stands and see your mom and dad there. Whether you ever play another game, well, whether you don't get another crack at it or whatever, you did it that once. That one time you played in the NHL, you played an NHL game, and you did it in the Maple Leaf Gardens with your parents watching.
That's awesome. That's really good stuff there, Crispy. Crispy, thanks as always for joining us, man. We appreciate it. Hope you're staying safe. Hope you're having as much fun as you can. And we're all doing the social distancing and the process that we're in right now. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks, fellas. Thanks to you. And thanks to all of our people out there who are adhering to the rules. And we will all get through this together. God bless you all.
Absolutely. Thanks, Crispy. Appreciate you. When we come back, PK Subban, former Nashville Predator and current New Jersey Devil, has an interesting idea to pass some time and help entertain folks through this coronavirus situation that we're going through right now. We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. And Joe, PK Subban back in the news. He had a conference call yesterday with some members of the NHL media and basically said that he is planning on hosting a trivia-based game show that will feature fans, celebrities, and NHL players during the NHL pause that's currently going on due to coronavirus. Now, if you think back, PK Subban actually does have some experience at hosting a show. He did the PK Subban's All-Star Special during the All-Star Weekend of 2019. Joe, I don't think a big surprise that PK Subban trying to make the most of a bad situation and getting out in front of things and hosting a trivia-based game show. I'm actually pretty intrigued by this. I think it could be pretty entertaining to watch PK Subban do his thing.
Yeah, it's a good idea and good on him for doing it. And it's probably a little bit of a precursor to his post-playing career, because I don't know what he's going to do, but I would suspect he would be in high demand to be, in some sort of broadcast role with the league. You know, I mean, we talked the other day about who we'd like to see on Monday Night Football and all that stuff. I mean, to me, I think P.K. Subban could be great in that kind of role. So this should be hopefully. I mean, look, I love the classic games, and I'm watching a lot of them too. And I'm still not watching. What's the Tiger? Tiger. PK said he's watching it. Tiger
the one on
King.
Netflix.
Yeah,
I haven't gotten into that yet.
Yeah, but something live with something light and live sounds good right now.
It does. And look, PK is a guy, obviously people here in Nashville very familiar with him. And you're right, Joe. Like, you look around the NFL, and I think, you know, former players or maybe even players that are still in the game that you try to project and look out to what their broadcasting career might look like if they choose to go that route. I think there's a lot of options. I look in the NHL, and in terms of, like, personalities that connect with people and just those outgoing, fun-loving types, P.K. Subban is kind of in a class by himself when it comes to the NHL. Not to say that, you know, everybody in the NHL is boring and they don't have personalities on public persona, but P.K., I think, just as we all know, for those who have been around him, he takes it to a little bit different level.
He does. I mean, the question I would have is, you know, can he be critical? I mean, that's because sometimes, you know, that's tough for guys. It seems like in the NHL you've got – some people who aren't, you've got some people who are too much, you know?
Like Milbury. I mean, he's just overly critical.
And even sometimes Roenick, I think, sometimes, you know, gets a little out there. Well, he can get a little out there in other stuff too.
Yes, again.
But, yeah, you got to have that balance of being able to call it like you see it. But I think as far as just presence and personality, he will be in high demand to do that. So this is a little bit of an audition, I guess, maybe for that. But every time he's been in any sort of, whether it's, you know, presenting something or commercials, or, you know, he has done studio stuff as well. He's knocked it out of the park. So he's just a natural at this stuff.
I think, like, as far as his time in Nashville is concerned, like, people maybe view it a little bit differently now that he was only here for 3 years, because at the time the trade was made between he and Shea Weber, like, one of the big selling points was, you know, PK is younger. And we feel like for a longer period of time, he could be here in Nashville. It could be a big part of this core as they move forward. But even so, with the way it went down, it really only being that 3-year window that he was here in Nashville, to me, it's not really a coincidence that they had their best 3 years during that time. I thought he was sensational for the most part during his time here. Now, his last season here, dealing with some injuries, didn't have quite the same production. And as we've seen this year in New Jersey, David Poile, I think, probably made the right call to get out from underneath that deal at the time that he did. But certainly, even though it was short-lived, I think a huge impact by P.K. Subban here in Nashville.
I agree. And yet, throughout that time, I, whenever on Twitter or even sometimes in comments and things like that, Subban came up, I swear there was always at least a couple of fans who were like, oh, he's the worst thing on this team's defense. He makes so many mistakes. I mean, there were. It's bizarre to me. Even the whole thing with Subban being booed by, I understand, like, some fan bases, there's a legit reason that something happened when he was with the Canadiens or whatever it was. You know, Pittsburgh fans, sure, after the way he and Crosby clashed in the finals. But
sure.
I never really understood the venom for him from a lot of fan bases, and I think fans here, some didn't appreciate him. I will say it over and over again, in 2017 playoff run, I just thought he was unbelievable in that run to the Cup final, and what he did as a shutdown player, you know, and he was going up against great players in that entire run. And then obviously, you know, the offensive contributions, I think the swagger and the willingness to be vocal, I think, was really big. I think that is missed. I think there was something, you know, he's a guy who's gonna guarantee a win here and there and things yeah. like that. And just even after a loss, Subban was a guy who unfortunately tried to hide and didn't want to talk all the time, which I was disappointed by. But in the playoffs, he talked. After losses especially, he was very, very good and analytical about it and honest about it. All that stuff, I think, is important for a team. And I do think they miss him in multiple ways.
I do, and it's easy if you're a Preds fan to look at the year he's had in New Jersey and just, you know, the production hasn't really been there defensively. Quite honestly, he hasn't been very good this year in New Jersey. And some of that, you know, I don't really know how healthy he is. Like, I mean, it seems like he's had, you know, what was rumored to be some back problems for a little bit now, and I just don't know how much he's fully recovered from that. But to your point, Joe, he was really good for the most part during his time here in Nashville. And I think, you know, some of the reads, I got a lot of that on Twitter too, of, you know, defensively he's not good. He turns the puck over all the time. And neither one of those, when you actually looked at it, were really true. I mean, he didn't turn the puck over really all that much. Now, I will say this, when he did turn the puck over, I mean, it was pretty blatant and it was pretty bad. And I think that went a long way mm-hmm. towards like creating that stigma about him that he just is kind of loose and careless with the puck. But I do think that sometimes the perception of what PK Subban was in terms of strictly the hockey player here in Nashville didn't quite match up to the reality of what the numbers bore out.
Yeah, and to be clear, when I say they miss him, they miss what he was. I think the timing of this was right. I mean, I still, for as difficult and frustrating as this season has been, and even though Matt Duchene has not lit the world on fire, I still think I would do the same thing over again. If I were David Poile going back to last summer, I'd do the same stuff. So I think it makes sense it was the right time, but I think what he was here is definitely missed. And to your point there, Robbie, about perception, reality, there was also the, you know, locker room problem stuff that people yeah. would talk about. Again, like, I think Subban, you're talking about an international star. So you're talking about somebody who comes with stuff. I mean, he has a team of people, right? I mean, most of these sure. guys don't have a team of people. So automatically you've got something a little bit different there. And I have no doubt that PK Subban inspired some eye rolls in his time here. But the idea that he was, like, bad for the locker room, it still makes me angry when to think back to some of that discussion, because it just wasn't rooted in truth. I mean, maybe everyone didn't love him. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, Taylor Lewan with the Titans is one of those guys that is going to get some eye rolls. And, you know, at times it's like maybe he's a little bit too much, right? And stuff like that. But, like, Taylor Lewan does not hurt or the Titans' locker room, and actually he's an asset. And I think Subban, kind of the same idea. And it's too bad that that stuff kind of follows him. And I think some of it is just, like, followed him from Montreal, and some of the talk was from up there.
Well, I think it's a big part of it, because I'll be honest, like, when he first got here in Nashville, I was just kind of waiting around for some of that, because you hear that out of Montreal, the restriction in the locker room. The organization and he didn't really see eye to eye on some of the stuff he was doing off the ice. So you're just kind of waiting for that. And I think to his credit and to the Predators' credit, while he was here, the relationship they had on the off-ice stuff he was doing, I mean, it couldn't have been better. I mean, I thought it was really perfect, from the Blue Line Buddies stuff to the, you know, the initiatives he had in the community helping out kids. Like, there was just a lot of things that PK Subban did really well. Were there times where, like, you looked around and it was just like, man, this guy can be a little much sometimes? Yeah, like, I'll be honest, like, I even felt that way from a media standpoint every now and then. So I'm sure there were players in the locker room that felt that way time and time again. But it's not like something I think that was just a huge issue in the locker room.
No, not at all. And again, that the swagger and the, I mean, it wasn't a fighter, but he was a guy who would step up for teammates and would be physical and would not be afraid to get in the face of someone, be physical with someone. Again, I think all that stuff is missed.
When we come back, Chris Lowe from ESPN will join us. We'll get some college football thoughts from him as well. Also, maybe take a look at how the coronavirus is affecting the college football world as a whole. That'll be next. But first, are you working from home during the COVID-19 pandemic? Stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app, enable our Alexa skill, or Google Home and ask to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. We'll be right back with Chris Lowe. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.